Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling, well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Johnny Ace turns again. The lazy river of wrestling criticism, Double or Nothing, Battleground, Weekly TV, you're soaking in it. And Invader Club from 1983, my choice, Wahoo McDaniel versus Nick Bockwinkel. I'm Jeff Hawkins, he's Chris Novembrino. Let's do a little housekeeping here first. So next week, I am off. And God bless you all who want to watch the wrestling next week. You have a four-hour AEW on Wednesday. You have Worlds Collide on YouTube. You have Money in the Bank on Saturday. You have plenty of stuff to watch. I'm not watching all of it. I'm going on vacation. So that also means, look, if big news happens, I get back next Sunday night late. I'll see if Nov wants to record, but if he's busy, I'll do an hour and I'll release.
I'm down to record on Sunday. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know my solo shows have been ravely reviewed, beloved by the public in the
past.
Hold on.
Do you want to do a solo show? Because I will be happy to let you do a solo show and release it for you.
I mean, I'm fine with doing that, and I've accepted my status as heel of the Voices of Wrestling Network. So this will give me an opportunity to truly turn on the listeners.
No, but Saturday is interesting because, and Sunday I'll have downtime because I'll be on a plane, so I could easily watch Money in the Bank and Worlds Collide and give ice cold thoughts on that on Sunday because it's on Saturday this year. I mean,
the reality is right now my rhythm, because I'm finishing up this album, I am spending, like, I'm here doing vocals and then I'm editing, and wrestling is a very good companion to my editing. So I'm catching everything. I am watching everything.
I just didn't want to bring my
editing vocals while
yeah
doing
I just something. Didn't I just didn't want to haul my equipment with me.
No, that's
and do
fine.
Podcasts on vacation. So, you know, I'm taking the week off my other show, too, because it's a four-hour AEW. For God's sake. But, no, I'm going to Wisconsin. Going to eat beer, meat, cheese, and water slides. That's what I'm doing. So, either Sunday I will record something when I get back, probably, and it'll probably release on Monday morning, or we'll see what Chris does during the week. And if he sends me something, I'll release it. And give a few notes on news or anything if there's anything big to do. But you'll get your audio. It's just going to be a little later in the week than you're used to. How about that?
And it might be different than what you're
might
used
be different.
To. But, like, you know what? You're a grown-ass man. It's time for you to expand your horizons.
Try the sushi. Try the California roll.
Literally, I'm just asking you to try any new vegetable.
I don't want to eat the asparagus.
Try broccolini with some olive oil. You might like it.
Okay. Attention must be paid. We are also kind of a music geekery show and has a wrestling connection. Rest in peace, Rick Derringer.
I have recorded I Am a Real American.
Have you? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
that was the theme song for Don't Worry About the Government for forever.
Well, okay. I'm just you can recall. You don't need to be incredulous with me.
Have you? I'm like, I know you've heard Don't Worry About the Government. You hate listened to it.
I was like a guest on it like three
that's
times
true.
And your
that's
audience
true.
Hated me, and that's
you,
fine too.
You hate
they,
it.
They should
it
try
too.
The they should try the broccolini with olive oil of trying something different.
Try something different.
Wrestling album 1 and 2, he was a producer on that. Real American, and of course the Demolition theme most famously, but also, you know, it's one of those guys, you look at his resume, and it's like, yeah, he's kind of a bit important to like Gen X kids, and I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, came to do the Wrestling Album 1 and 2 through working with Cyndi Lauper on the True Colors album, and also brought in Jim Steinman, who is Meatloaf's producer, and did a lot of orchestral stuff. But he and Steinman worked also on Total Eclipse of the Heart by Bonnie Tyler and Air Supply's Making Love Out of Nothing at All. First came to prominence as lead singer of the group The McCoys and their song Hang On Sloopy. You're aware of that song, right, Chris?
Yeah. Wow. I knew he was around longer than I had realized, because he has a run in the 70s, too, where he's playing with Edgar Winter and everything.
Yes, he is the rhythm guitar on Edgar Winter's Free Ride and Frankenstein. They're too big. And Edgar and Johnny Winter. He plays for Steely Dan a bit on my rival and my favorite Steely Dan tune, Showbiz Kids. He's the slide guitar on Showbiz Kids. Also, for Gen X kids, he's very important because he produced the first 6 Weird Al Yankovic albums.
Okay. All right.
And he also had he's known as a one-hit wonder, though. His song Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo from the 1970s.
Yep.
If you're aware of that. Yeah. So, I mean, and he's a guy who played forever. He did the Ringo Starr All-Star tours and other things like that. I mean, he was one of those guys. Good session player, did a whole bunch of stuff, but I am a big fan of the Demolition theme song. I really am. It's one of my favorite entrance themes that WWF ever did.
Isn't he the guy who wrote the Transformers theme?
He might have. I've only done a shallow reading of Rick Derringer's resume, because I'm like, for me, it was always like Hang On Sloopy and Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. That well,
because no, I listen to all these things. Wasn't.
Okay. Nope. But if you're going to go listen to him, Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, big Showbiz Kids and My Rival by Steely Dan. And of course, you know, Weird Al. Everything Weird Al. Oh, he played guitar on Eat It. He's the guy who played the guitar in all the parodies for Weird Al also, so.
Okay. I mean, like, that's no slouch work. I mean,
no!
He has to do a lot of imitation work of different players and that sort of thing, and that means you have to study how those other players play and at least osmos a fair amount of what they're doing in there. And it shows some diversity.
Like, Weird Al albums are... they get kind of short shrift because they're comedy albums, but the parodies that he does, not just the straight ahead parodies, the parodies of songs, which are always on point to me.
But like the imitations of songs, like Dare to Be Stupid.
The style, yes. The things that, yeah, Dare to Be Stupid, which is in the style of Devo. I'm trying to remember the one about nuclear war that he did that was in the style of... but he has the style... Christmas at Ground Zero, I believe. Yeah. The stylistic songs that he decides to do. Also, you know, they have to hit the style, and sometimes they're so subtle you don't even realize it. Like, I was too young to know Devo all that well, so... But yeah, no, Rick Derringer, rest in peace. The wrestling albums are... they were never my thing, Chris. And because I was always a little bit too old for them by the time they came out, I think. I wasn't raised on WWF, but I admit they have good musicianship.
The sound of music was also really changing pretty dramatically. So anything that was made... in the late 80s, by 1993 or 1994, it sounded archaic. Production, then it sounded dated even sooner.
I mean, Vince on the Wrestling Album 1 is doing Land of a Thousand Dances in like 1986 or 7, and Stand Back, and, you know, 50s style review songs. And so, I mean, it's so funny because... the main criticism of some writers when they'd give like a bad pitch is Vince would go, you're setting the business back 30 years. But all of Vince's pop culture tastes are 30 years in the past every time he's come in, because he's just catching up to things. Like, he loves old time TV serials and stuff like that. And that's what he referred to in the 1980s when he was doing wrestling and stuff. So,
yeah.
Into the news. John Laurinaitis dropped as a defendant in the Janelle Grant lawsuit in exchange for cooperation. Charges dismissed with prejudice, which means they can't be refiled. Lawyers for Grant Laurinaitis released a statement about after the settlement stating John Laurinaitis has agreed to cooperate and provide evidence in Janelle Grant's lawsuit against Vince McMahon and WWE. His agreement to a confidential settlement is a pivotal next step toward holding McMahon and WWE accountable and bringing justice to Ms. Grant after years of sexual abuse and trafficking. Mr. Laurinaitis looks forward to moving on with his life. We cannot provide any additional details at this time. Dave notes it should also be noted in regarding Laurinaitis testifying against McMahon that McMahon has essentially helped Laurinaitis out of a sexual harassment allegation in 2012, settling for $1.5 million. Chris, my basic legalese and experience in a law firm, combined with my pure cynicism that the answer to why do most people do most things is money, leads me to believe one of two things. Either John Laurinaitis, much like how this case started, had an agreement of some sort with the McMahons that the McMahons stopped paying, or if they go to arbitration slash trial, who knows, that WWE and Vince McMahon are looking to settle, and oh, by the way, John, you're on the hook for one third of this settlement, and we have deep pockets. And you have to kind of pay your fair share here a little bit. But I am under the impression that there is something to do with money involved in all this, as opposed to some sort of great thing that is eating at John Laurinaitis' soul. And I think it's a mutually beneficial thing because Janelle Grant's team likes to leak stuff to the media. And here's Johnny Ace, who's going to have a whole heaping pile of information that, oh, if it's not confidential, might get out there. What do you think?
Right. I think McMahon did Johnny Ace dirty here and hung him out to dry and thought that it didn't matter if he financially covered Johnny Ace. And when it did matter, because Johnny Ace doesn't have the financial solvency to do something like that, I think he's underestimated the potential damage that this could do to the case, because yes, now Johnny can, one, talk to the press with stuff that isn't confidential for him, but two, he might be able to help move the needle in this arbitration case.
I don't know. That's the weird thing here, is the arbitration agreement is such that, I mean, it's,
well,
it's
you gotta
there.
You gotta think Janelle Grant and her attorney sees some sort of utility.
Yes.
So
yes, but I don't know
what that is based off of, but I assume that they see something.
To me, it's the PR. And it's the, if it goes to arbitration, we can argue this thing in the press and we can still trash Vince, to be honest with you. It's one of those things where it's like, yes, there is utility in Johnny Ace because he knows where the bodies are buried.
Right, right.
It's just, will he be able to tell you? I mean, he's going to tell you where the bodies are buried. It's just, will you be able to have that, be able to come out in court by then, you know, because this judge has taken a hell of a long time to determine whether or not they're going to arbitration. It's very odd for a judge to wait this long to comment on it, even though it's a new judge and they're getting up to speed, et cetera, et cetera. They've already had hearings about this. But, I mean, yeah, Johnny, there's to me, there's eerie similarities in the CM Punk Colt Cabana relationship to the Vince McMahon Johnny Ace relationship in some ways. It feels like that there's kind of a, because I thought Johnny Ace was indemnified with Vince's team, but maybe I was wrong on that. I thought they had a united front and they had signed an agreement on that, but you know, like every other agreement in this case, they can be broken, I guess.
Yeah, I guess a thing that's in dispute.
Yes. I don't think it's so weird because it's also like there's no way in hell Johnny Ace comes out of this looking like some sort of hero or some sort of good actor in it. I mean, they tried that when the initial charges were that, oh, Johnny Ace was a victim of Vince McMahon too. And then it's like, well, now we're joining Vince in WWE. And now it's like, well, never mind. Now we're joining Janelle Grant and her team. I just think it's, hey, WWE and Vince have deep pockets. And you know who doesn't? Johnny Ace.
Yeah, no, it's just a shame for a guy with such a sterling reputation to have this chapter of his life turn him into a bit of a weasel.
Oh, just now we're finding out that.
Yeah, no, weasel. I, yeah, right. This is a bit shocking for me in terms of what I estimated his character to be at.
Weasels are going, hold on, why are you bringing us into this? Aerolucha officially out of business, releasing a statement this week saying that the WWE AAA deal has made it not viable. Duh. Aerolucha to me was never going to get out. This is one of those pre-pandemic things.
Hey, at least they have someone to blame.
Yes, it had Rey Mysterio attached to it, but just, yeah, whatever.
They have someone to blame.
Maybe in the wake of Lucha Underground going under, you thought there might be some hope, but no. According to sources, the plans for the length of SmackDown have changed. Great. WWE and USA agreed back in January that SmackDown would go back to 2 hours after May 30th. The show will now remain 3 hours for the foreseeable future, as USA Network has been happy with the show numbers-wise with the third hour. Discussions on if the show will revert back to 2 hours are currently ongoing, with an idea that could happen when the overall new television season starts in late September for all networks. Yes, this is why all these NXT people are getting prepped for going up to the main roster, including Stephanie and Jordan Grace and Ricky Starks, etc., etc. But yes, if you're not getting enough wrestling in your diet, here's a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the third hour for SmackDown just so that it gives that roster equal time with the main roster, but bringing up more people is not the solution for filling the television time as much as it is getting some hot angles going on there, like the Bloodline, that can chew up 20 minutes, 30 minutes of the show easily.
In the pettiness department, two stories this week. Great American Bash will be going head-to-head with AEW's All In. Also that weekend, Saturday night's main event and Evolution 2. Also, NXT running the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia on August 19th, 1 week before AEW kicks off a 7-show residency there. This is what WWE does, and this is why, for me personally, I said, hey, don't go out there, Tony Khan, Chris Jericho, Will Ospreay, and just do your thing, man. Don't do, because they're going to keep punching you long after the bullying stops or is supposed to be over. And I don't know, Chris. I don't view things in terms of good and evil. I've always realized that WWE does this because they're terrible and they put people I liked out of business. But it's like one of those things where AEW fans are just like, this is wrong, and they're terrible people. Just like, were you not expecting this at any point in the relationship?
Yeah, I think that Tony would do the same thing if the roles were reversed, and he would be getting cheered for doing so. And I think the argument would essentially be made of, what's the downside? I thought... they were running this fantastic company. I watched this intro for the Young Bucks this week, Jeff. Very provocative stuff. talking about all the wonderful things they've done for all these wonderful wrestlers. And if they have, then, what, you know, they can handle a little competition, right?
I think what's interesting to me, and you're not privy to this, but listening to Meltzer's...
Yeah, privy me up.
He's somewhat concerned, or he says, you know what might happen, because there's this weird narrative. He and Brandon Thurston, who, you know, friend of the show, like them, but they're going over these numbers for Raw and SmackDown and NXT, and they're approximating viewership, and they're going lower, and even though business doesn't say it's going lower, And they're thinking, well, in some WWE people's minds who watch other products and crossover, this could make AEW the good guy and WWE the bad guy. And I'm just like, no, the people who have that ingrained in them love that kind of red meat and love thinking that. But I don't think it's converting any fans who watch both to saying, yes, I feel AEW is a good product because WWE is bullying them. I just can't get there.
No, one. What percentage of the audience do we think is cognizant of the touring schedule? 20%
of WWE?
Yeah, of WWE. Like, they know if it's going to run in their town.
I'd go with a good third.
A third, yeah. Like the, I would say, like, they know it's going to run in their town would be to me the general thing. Like, yeah, if you're a fan, you'll know when they're coming. But you're not going to know where they are next week. And as such, what are the odds that one third, and being, you know, very generous here, thinks about the AEW schedule and then does a cross comparative analysis of the AEW touring schedule relative to the WWE schedule?
Nobody.
And also,
only WrestleMania is doing that.
I am not finished. And also measures morality based off of a moral matrix that is driven on it is unethical and morally vacuous, dare I say morally bankrupt, to run in the same town as another company. And again, are aware of the history of WWE and the 1980s territory collapse that was provided by Vince McMahon, and are actively in a bit of a moral quandary where they don't know how they feel about these two companies.
Chris, your assignment this week?
That percentage, I would say, is glaringly low, Jeff.
I want to see that Venn diagram this next week.
Because it's like layers upon layers. And in the center is a man named Steve.
Yes, and he subscribes to Voices of Wrestling and WrestleNomics Patreon.
And every week is a bit of moral agony for Steve. Yes. I know he's out there because he's watching it, and part of his heart feels for AEW, but then he sees that stuff about the Young Bucks and they're being dickheads, but like they're the good guy. Are they the good guy? Then the CM Punk stuff. Every week, Steve has he's wrestling 5-star matches in his heart, Jeff.
I'll give a little bit of a related story because this came out from our friends in Fightful. Let me preface it. I think it's both brilliant marketing because it's feeding chum in the waters to the people who love this red meat sort of stuff. But there's also that cynical part of me that goes, oh, it's so precocious. Yes, I know it's marketing, and it feeds into a narrative that AEW and its fans want to believe. But here we go. As part of the Double or Nothing main event, an interesting element of the story was that Hangman Page actually pushed for Will Ospreay to win, while Will Ospreay pushed for Hangman Page to win.
That's beautiful.
Those that we spoke to said that Tony Khan was even noncommittal throughout the process when talent would ask him who won.
Well, this is so stupid. They could have done a double count out.
The feeling backstage was that of quote-unquote shock, as most everyone believed Will Ospreay would end up winning the match. Oh, Chris, isn't it so precocious, like a Wes Anderson film, that this community of wrestlers are thinking about each other? And this is the good guy. They're not politicking backstage for their spot, and they are not like CM Punk, who is a malcontent. No, no, no. Hangman Page walked into that office and said, "No, no, sir. I don't think I should be in the main event of your biggest pay-per-view of the year. I think that should be Will Ospreay, sir." And then Will Ospreay, through the kindness of his heart, walked into that Tony Khan office and, when asked, said, "No, no, sir. Hangman Page has been here for longer and is a far more marketable human being.
No, you're burying the real headline here, which is apparently everyone's reporting that nobody is writing this shit and that we can all just go into the office and everyone just sort of, I don't want to do it. And no one cares. Tony hasn't made up his mind because he hasn't written down anything. So that's great. If you like long-term booking, you just got confirmation that we don't do that shit here at AEW because everyone's feelings, not your fans' feelings, and making sure they're engaged, but the performers' feelings are number one. This is a place where the feelings of the wrestler matter.
Yes, because WWE, it's nothing but rape dungeons over there. We're the good company. I think this is brilliant marketing because this is leaked for a reason.
I get why they're leaking it, but they're missing what the self-report here is, which is apparently no one has a strong enough pen to be like, guys, get the F out of here. I've written down a story. You're doing the story. You don't. And the fact that the pen is not strong enough already, that Hangman Page and Ospreay know better than to step to the pen and be like, no, I want to change the story. Is another sign of weakness. There's multiple beats of weakness revealed in this story, which they're putting out there to make it seem like, again, everybody's feelings are good. Everyone gets hurt. This is great. No, there's a story. There's an author. Write a story. You can't have a long-term book if no one's holding a pen.
Takeshita and Yuka Sakazaki revealed on social media that they have gotten married. That is
congrats.
An embarrassing couple. Yeah, I'm for that. That's a giant and a mini person right there. big fan of Yuka Sakazaki. Make her part of the Callis family as a killer, please. Do it.
They're probably a very cute couple when they're
together. They are adorable. My God, it's got diabetes looking at their social media.
Yes, they're probably adorable. Like, yes,
they
you
are.
Would love to hang out with them.
Former WWE Chairman Vince McMahon's plans to launch a sports entertainment media investment firm have been moving forward with a filing revealing the name of the new venture. First reported by WrestleNomics today, the company will be called 14th and I, with the focus on opportunities within the three spaces mentioned above. Whoopie crap.
What a name, man. People
I'm guessing
really
that's the, I'm guessing that's the address of the office is 14th and ooh, how creative that is, Vince. It's really, you know, that name is really telling us what the company is all about and forward looking statements.
Yeah, it's evocative, Jeff.
That's why you're the best analyst in the industry, Nove. injuries, returns, and departures. Bronson Reed returning on Saturday night's main event as part of this Seth Rollins Braun Breaker faction.
He's a great ad. He was a nice wild card into the mix.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. Injuries. It's the women. It's all women, it seems. Chelsea Green injured on that same Saturday night's main event, kicked in the face by Zelina Vega. Harley Cameron and Anna Jay both hurt in the hardcore match on Wednesday. Actually, Harley Cameron's injury came at the buy-in for Double or Nothing in a match that I thought over-delivered between the two teams. And Abaddon saying today that she will not be returning to AEW. Any of those you'd like to hit on before we go into the Lazy River?
The Harley Cameron and Anna Jay, I don't have anything profound to say other than I that match was a bit excessive for where it was on the card and the stakes and everything around it.
I am going to go into that for the Dynamite match, the no DQ, because my take on that is going, if you listened to Wednesday on my show, you already know, but I have a far different point of view than everybody else who has critiqued it from there. But yes, it's the Lazy River of Wrestling Criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. There's a plethora of places to go, including Ice Cold Takes, if you so choose, on Double or Nothing and Saturday Night's Main Event. I will go a little bit probably into them, but I did a post-show on Double or Nothing already. If you had a chance to watch it, now would probably be the time, Chris, but I'm going to allow you to start wherever you'd like to start.
Yeah. It's been a few days since I've watched Double or Nothing. I'm trying to think if anything
was I will fill time while you think if you'd like. I liked the show. I mean, it was a good show. I thought it was... I'm with everybody else that it was too long, and you should probably cut three matches out of there that weren't important, were decent
find
matches.
Find me an AEW show where that is not a true statement about the product.
Anarchy in the Arena, finally, you know, it got going. Shout out to the Gen Y people who loved Bodies by Drowning Pool.
I thought fighting over the jukebox was a move. But yes, it took a long time to get going, and I did not care for the multi-screenage usage.
They were missing a lot of things on the multi-screenage is my problem with it.
Yeah, I have preferred these when there's just everybody in frame and we kind of go to different people and different set pieces and stuff. I mean, I don't think you need to see everything. I also don't, to your point too, man, I think when everyone's trying to do something crazy all at once in like four-panel window, I can't watch any of them. I'm seeing four things and I'm seeing nothing.
Yeah, it's a better experience to me live. I went to last
agree,
year's
but
live,
then again,
and it was,
I'm still picking what I'm looking at. Like instead of having four visuals in front of me, I look at the one thing. Then I turn over here and I look at this thing. Oh, there's some shit happening in the ring. That's crazy. Oh, what's going on over here on the entryway? But I'm not, you know, looking at the entryway. Meanwhile, in the corner of my eye, there's three other images that are distracting me. And even on a big TV, it's like, which, you know, behind me, you can see my TV's not small. It's like, do I stand up and just kind of look at the screen I want to look at? I want to sit on my couch. I'm not trying to do this shit.
We need something like DirecTV where they have the multi-screen things and you'd switch either between one or like the multi-screen thing. And then, let me just follow Samoa Joe around and whatever the hell he's doing.
That would actually be awesome. I mean, obviously the functionality for that doesn't exist, but like that would be excellent for these matches when that technology does finally exist.
Yeah.
Until then, you know, it would slap with that technology. It will open up so many interesting wrestling matches. But until then, you gotta have like maybe two things, right? You have some stuff happening in the ring, and you have some stuff happening backstage, and like everyone's kind of wadded into one of those two balls.
My match of the night was Mercedes and Jamie Hayter. God, Mercedes is so good, and they should have built the company around her when she signed. And they're building it to the Tony thing, which is correct. But I think they're doing it to put Tony over Mercedes, which I think is incorrect because Timeless is an AEW character. Mercedes is still Sasha Banks to a lot of people. But
that is exactly why Tony is going to do it.
Yes. I liked the main event, too. My critique of the main event between Hangman and Will Ospreay is that it didn't get going for me until halfway through when Will Ospreay started punching and kicking and Taz said, oh, it's a mistake to get into a fight with Hangman. No, that's what I wanted this entire time, because this entire feud in that go home promo was built on, I need to see if I'm tough enough to beat Jon Moxley. And instead it was just kind of, oh, we're doing moves and whatnot. When it broke down and started becoming fight night, And them trying to destroy each other with Styles clashes off the apron and stuff like that, then it got really good for me. And I don't have a lot bad to say other than the length of this show to get everybody on. Like, it didn't need a cool down segment between the Callis family and the Paragon. It really didn't. I mean, that match was fine.
Now, I mean, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong are just so on this roster. They exist. They just exist on this roster. And, I mean, one thing that's very clear to me, you said three matches could be cut from this show and run on TV.
Maybe four.
I was going to say, it's probably closer to four to five to me. Like, Mercedes, what are the keepers? You keep Mercedes.
Mercedes, Anarchy, Main event.
Anarchy, Timeless, and the main
Maybe
event.
Maybe Timeless. I mean, Timeless yeah. and Mina was good, but yeah.
Yeah, but like, no, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that. Yeah. That's a much tighter show, and the rest yes. of this stuff, like the Hurt Syndicate versus the Sons of Texas, do not tell me that's a pay-per-view match.
It Briscoe wasn't. And Ricochet was good, but it doesn't have to be
that's
on
not,
here.
That's not a pay-per-view
no,
match.
No, I get that. I liked the FDR match, but it needed somebody to turn heel, and also because Daddy Magic cut that promo that said, I'm bringing a crowbar. Chekhov's crowbar was nowhere to be seen, but either Nigel, Daniel Garcia, or Daddy Magic needed to turn heel at the end of that match, and they didn't. So I assume that's going to be an angle for Collision. But yeah, I agree. The Hurt Syndicate match didn't need to be on there. The Okada Speedball Mike Bailey match didn't need to be on there.
No, Mike Bailey does not.
And I like Mike Bailey a lot, but
I like him as a talent, but like you've done no story with this man.
He
so
had to
far.
Win that match if he's in it, and instead he just kind of like he looked small, and Okada was lazy for half the match, and then he picked it up. Yeah. So, but I'm going to go from that into, I think maybe my pet peeve of Dynamite first. And I liked it's this opening promo. And it was the biggest roller coaster of a promo I think I've ever seen in modern wrestling in the last 5 years. Because we start with Hangman. And Hangman is talking about winning is fleeting and so is losing. It's a very ennui type of thing. I have to give up this Owen Hart because someone else is going to win it next year. But wrestling's about dignity and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, no, this is... But then he flips the switch. He goes, and I promise I'm going to win it all in. I'm like, you should have started with that. Don't bury the lead on your promo. Follow the energy of that instead of this, I'm not happy with winning and I'm not happy with losing stuff. I didn't like that. But then, you know, he gets into it. And then Swerve comes out. And this part is awesome to me. Because he's bringing out the Young Bucks video who says, hey, we helped Hangman for a reason. We back your play and we screwed Swerve. So Swerve, still a little bit sore at that. That's fine. And I like that he's staring a hole into Hangman the entire time. That was pretty great. I mean, Swerve staring a hole into Hangman, angry still. Hangman still kind of miffed at Swerve. But then Will Ospreay comes out. And this is where I went, no, no, no. Hangman comes, or Ospreay comes out and goes, both of you have beat me. And raised my hand, and we only have one shot to save this company. And I went, no, corporate fealty is wrong. And also, if we only have one shot at this, then why did we lock the Death Riders in an ambulance last night?
Save this company from what?
Yes, exactly.
There is this.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Nebulously defined existential threat that has been the plot point of so many of these promos. And what is it? What are the Young Bucks building a Death Star?
And you have one shot at it, yes.
We only are going to be able to fly the X-Wing in and shoot the torpedo one time. What is the threat that the Death Riders... Why does Jon Moxley put the belt in a briefcase? Why does it matter? Why at this point it should matter? Commentary should be able to tell us why it matters as a recap. We should have already heard from the Death Riders, of course, but we should know certain things in order to do an existential threat angle.
It's almost like John Cena in the I'm trying to ruin wrestling for you.
Yes. Yeah, these guys are making me nostalgic for the days of the authority, because at least you believed that Triple H and Stephanie were in control of the company and in control of the week-to-week machinations of everything that was going on TV. Yeah, the Young Bucks come out and intermittently say they're in control. They control nothing. They don't tier, their tyranny is lazy at best. And
yes,
it's mostly limited to them having grandiose entrances and coming down the center instead of coming out the left or the right side. Wow. Exciting shit. There's your existential threat, Jeff.
Yeah.
What if everyone came down the middle?
You know, what's funny is Seth Rollins is doing the same story, kind of. I'm the future of wrestling, and we need to save wrestling from CM Punk. And you're just like, no, you're not the future of wrestling. You're the present, and you might actually be the past, given you're pushing 40.
I'm gonna buck against that a little bit, because though I think there are obvious issues with the Rollins faction or whatever so far, they also articulate who their enemies are clear way. And their goal is to control belts. They have a very clear stated goal here. Rollins wants the world title. And obviously Heyman wants to get belts on Braun and Bronson, and that'll probably happen in relatively short order with this tag division. And like, they have a goal of controlling the company by controlling the belts. The Bucks don't even do that.
No.
And the Death Riders don't really do that. Or when they have the belts are not used in any meaningful way for leverage. Jon Moxley comes out as a temper tantrum about like not wanting to be in Brooklyn or whatever town they're in that day. And then they have matches.
Yes. The EVPs are not evil EVPs. They're just
right,
EVPs.
They're not evil. Yeah. And they're not even EVPs. Like, they just, it's almost like they have that title like Sasha Banks has the CEO title.
That'd be funny if she comes in, hey, I was told I was a CEO, so that makes me higher than you, doesn't
right.
it? Go where would you like, sir.
We can hang out in the Dynamite realm here.
Okay.
Gabe Kidd's outfits. I know that they're supposed to be wrestling-based get-ups, but you look stupid. From the AEW loyal, should be a clear indicator that you need to change your outfits, buddy. This look that you're doing does not work. It does look stupid. But to get that from the AEW loyals, it's time to change up the look, Gabe Kidd.
I will stay in the AEW Dynamite realm as well, because, Chris, I had 30 minutes of the most fun I had watching professional wrestling in a long time. Yes, the AEW Hot Girl Hardcore Division is back. And look, I get that these women should not be doing a hardcore match in any fashion, and I was concerned for their safety.
Oh, it's gratuitous, especially if it's not going to be the close of the show.
But they were also fighting for their life, both literally and figuratively out there.
All the more reason why it should have been the close of the show.
And I enjoyed every moment of this match. I did. I love Megan Bain. Penelope Ford crawling almost like, I don't want to go on this top rope and do this doomsday device. And Megan just going, no, you go up there, and setting her on top there. Anna and Harley just destroying themselves. Like, when Anna landed face first on that chair without covering up, I the number of groans I said in this match while still enjoying it are almost sickening. But yes, I loved this match, and everybody else seemed to hate it. And then it was followed by unrepentant stupidity of Mercedes in the convertible holding up the title long after the car had stopped and not getting out, as if she's waiting for a cue to finally get out of the car. And then that was followed by this Ops versus the Frat House match. I love love delusional mid-card heels. And I loved everything about this Jack Jameson promo. Win or lose, we still booze. Joe, watching this ridiculousness, just waiting to kill these geeks. Oh, this is what I want pro wrestling to be. I just want to have fun. I don't want serious, technically sound matches. No, I want stupid things and bad people beating up other people and all that other stuff, man. I had a blast watching that 30 minutes before it got super serious again.
Yes. Again, I thought that the hardcore match was actually good for what it was. And I, given, again, the amount of sacrifice that these women are putting on their bodies, just having this as a throwaway match pisses me off on some like profound level. Like
it does a little bit, doesn't it?
Do it. Yes, doing that level of work and taking that level of injury of your body, if you're willing to do that work, you ought to get a showcase. It shouldn't
to
just
please
be
to please the star rating gods out there, I guess, or something. I don't know. I mean, you're kind of right that this should have been a showcase versus just like middle of the show fodder.
Yeah, that irritates me. Then we let's swing over to Raw though. I got to talk about the Penta spot here. What the hell was he thinking? What in God's name was he thinking with this spot? Like this is such a ridiculous. The spot in question here is a double power spot where he lifts Phoenix over his head and then it's Dragon Lee. He lifts Dragon Lee over his head and then. He grabs Chad Gable into a pile driver position and then just dumps Chad Gable on his face and neck in a profoundly reckless way.
The list of groans this week was huge because let me put a few in here after that. Chad Gable getting destroyed by El Vikingo with the kick to the head afterwards that just busted it open. Kyle Fletcher power bombing Adam Cole on the apron on Dynamite, and even like one of the Jacksons when they did the Swanton through the table, and he just cracked his head. It looked like on the back there. Oh, and the DDT from Mercedes to Jamie Hayter, which looked much worse than it was. But you know, between all these, I'm just like, it was not a good week for a lot of people. But continue, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. I mean that was really my only thought on the Pentamat. I mean that was he's been having a very nice run. I clearly feeling himself too much in that moment.
Yes, he loves sports entertainment, and it shows. But man, between him and Vikingo. On Gable. I'm like, Gable has a right to hate luchadors. That gimmick needs to be close to a shoot now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was just a mess. Oh, and the Zelina Vega Chelsea Green spot on Saturday night's main event that just blew up Chelsea's nose. I mean, you're just like, my God, people. Don't kick people in the face if you don't know how to work it. That's all I'm asking here, but...
You know, next topic, Lyra and Becky, this stinks. Oh. God, these two are just stinking up the joint.
And Lyra's not doing a bad job on her promo. It's just the content of it. And Becky's the albatross here.
Is Becky a good promo? Are we at the point where it's like, She is like the equivalent of a power hitter in baseball where she can knock it out of the park like 26% of the time. And then these other times she on the regular basis, she kind of goes out there and lays eggs.
Anything after the man has come back.
Yeah, it's been hammy.
Is Rob Deere. It's either strikeout. And I wouldn't even say home run because I can't name you a home run Becky promo, per se.
But yeah, not lately.
Looking defiant when her nose was busted open by Nia Jax. I mean, that made the man character, and she had the vibe, the Stone Cold comes to the ring. I'm tough, but Becky, look, I've said this before. Becky has a penchant for the Al Pacino School of Acting. She goes big, and it's out of control sometimes. And I think people want to cheer her too. I don't think people want to boo Becky Lynch. And I just think
I don't think anyone's really biting on her as a heel. I'm kind of with you on that. Part of the reason why this is cold is they want her to be a baby face.
And Lyra has to get word salad-y too in her promos, and that's just bad for her. I mean, she has the emotion. I think she's improved. She's possibly the most improved promo in WWE, but it's still.
They need to stop overriding some of these promos on the main roster and just let some of these guys speak. Give them gist and bullet points, but like let them go out there and connect the dots and just trust that like they don't need to regurgitate lines.
My one Raw main roster note, and I kind of took it from Brian Alvarez, who is the king of wrestling audio to me. Finn Balor is so fantastic in these Judgment Day segments. Being a guy with varying motives and how, like, he hates Dominic Mysterio. He's kind of liking the trouble that he's in when Roxanne comes in, but he still kind of likes, he's kind of jealous of Liv. There's a lot, he still wants to be leader of this crew. He and JD are boys. Carlito's a knucklehead always. The levels that we used to have with Damian Priest and Liv are kind of back with the addition of this Roxanne chicken nugget storyline with Dominic.
Yeah. And Finn doing, I agree. Yaman's worked in this understated performance of like, okay, he likes having Roxanne around because it gives him a leverage point on Dom and Liv. Because Roxanne can create friction between Dom and Liv, and Finn can kind of stand back and let it happen, or he can temper it and be the peacemaker when that's strategically advantageous to him. It's a fine storyline. Finn is a good entertainer.
That three-way was great, too.
I agree on that, yeah.
Yeah, but you knew... God, I hate this. We need to have one of these stupid authority figures come out and go, hey, you can be DQ'd in a three-way.
I agree.
And it can
right?
turn into a one-on-one because it's becoming too much now, man. Every three-way
it's too
became
obvious.
Yes.
It's too well, I mean, honestly, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you use a chair? Why wouldn't you bring in outside interference? Why wouldn't you? I agree. The triple threat rules do need to be amended to be like a default. Yeah, you can get disqualified and eliminated from the match. Match will continue until there's a winner, but you can be declared the loser.
Let's move to NXT.
All right. Trick Williams is your new champion, Jeff.
Of TNA.
And the thing that is strange to me about this is not committing to giving him a faction at this point.
I thought for certain Dark State backing Trick. Here we go. Champion. I'm going to keep this title and have a long. He might lose this in his first match. To Mike Santana, who had a good night. Mike Santana had a great night for Mike Santana's
prospects. Davion Heights.
And he was good, too. I mean, I'm not giving him short shrift.
Outstanding. Davion was great. I was really impressed with Davion Heights in the Mike Santana match. I mean, it wasn't like, you know.
Yes.
They weren't going like, you know, to try to do five-star moves. They were just, the work that they were doing was all just being done at an unbelievably high level.
I thought so, too. I thought, man, and I know we're doing this whole Regal's kid is splitting up the no-quarter catch crew stuff, but I don't know, man. I think it's too early to break off Miles. I think Miles Bourne has to have kind of a journey to get there as opposed to I'm ready now and I'm going to leave.
I like Miles Bourne, too. I after watching the Tavia at Heights match, I thought Miles Bourne had a nice match against Obafemi, too. He's a good worker.
Yes. And yeah, I think Miles and Tavion need to have a relationship there where they're like morally conflicted because they're both breaking away from Regal's kid in some way mentally, and maybe even bring in Ren Sinclair to be part of that too. Like everybody's starting to think, hey, maybe we've run our course and we can go our own ways and we're good now. And you know, like every other faction, no, I the leader needs this more than any of the sum of its parts type of thing.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do with No Quarter Catch Crew because they haven't really told a particularly coherent story up to this point, and it's going to be kind of hard to retcon it to be consistent.
Once we got rid of Damon Kemp and kind of reformed it and did it, they just kind of became red shirts for Charlie Dempsey. So
I miss Damon Kemp.
I do too. he's wrestling indies now. I forget his name on the indies, but
Damon Kemp. I'm the biggest apologist for that guy.
I think my favorite spot of the weekend in NXT though, Jordynne Grace getting out of the what people call the face humper, rolling around, getting on the desk, and just staring a hole into Booker T. Yes, more ownage of Booker T, please. I have come up, Chris, with a limited Booker T bad impression for Shake Them Ropes Theater. Should we need it?
Here we go. Excellent.
Shake Them Ropes Theater presents Booker T. To hell, man! Thank you.
He is him and Vic's dynamic is truly something else. The antagony between those two it's not the best commentary I've ever heard in my life, but it's some of the most entertaining at times because it's like Vic and Corey are desperately trying to do a show with a crazy man on the third microphone.
But Booker T also is the Brian Cage of commentary. He wants to get his shit in,
no matter
what. And if it's time for him to do his ah chant or him yelling at Trick Williams's intro, oh yeah, whatever, being part of the act or whatever, and it gets foiled, he needs his milk and he needs his Kent Brockman Danish before he goes on the air. He doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, no, him getting Patty Pants is great too. It's an interesting show. Is definitely what I'd say. Jasper Troy should not be going up against Obafemi.
Dante Chen. Go ahead.
Poor Dante Chen. This guy's toast on the next round of cuts.
He's the gatekeeper of NXT. Oh, is he?
I think so.
Well, when commentary said that, I go, we never see him gatekeep for anybody.
Yeah.
And why would you do that to somebody?
Right. Also, once you say gatekeeper, you mean they don't live in the castle.
Yes.
Like not king material is what I hear when you say gatekeeper. And Tatum Paxley, don't know what we're doing with her. She's got to beat Jada Parker in a story like this, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I like Jada, but Jada can actually handle a loss to Tatum Paxley, especially if it's kind of a fluky one. Backslide, schoolboy, that sort of thing.
If we're going to feel sorry for Tatum Paxley and this thing of which we cannot speak, the firing of her friends.
Okay, but then that's my other question. I feel like maybe Gigi's coming back.
No. I don't think so.
I mean, they zoomed in on that red-haired doll. I feel like...
Did they? Well, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
They did.
I think it's going to become one of those things where she turns somebody into a redhead, like Thea Hale or something like that. I don't know. You might be right. I haven't heard anything. Let's get to the main event. Finally getting her props in what I thought was a shocking win, and you need these sometimes. And they kept the secret there. JC Jane, your new NXT women's title. She's one of that kind of Bayley posse down there of women who really kind of stuck to Bayley in training and things like that and really admire her. And look, we've talked about her for years now as when she got into that Toxic Attraction gimmick and she was kind of a little fish out of water with the character-y stuff. She was a good wrestler, but then she started to nail the character stuff. And the work improved on her. I'm happy to see what she does, but
need the faction.
Yeah. I think they have to send Fallon up this time. But if they're just going to do the Fallon that wants JC Jane's title, no thanks. That's no buys for me.
No, if they're going to do that, I actually want them to do that story early and burn the faction. Just go right to it, have JC beat Fallon, and that's the end of Toxic Attraction. That question's out of the picture. Now
yeah,
we have JC on her.
We'll repackage Jasmine as something else because she's a third wheel in this faction, quite frankly.
Yeah, and whatever they're trying to do with her looks-wise right now isn't working either. It's incoherent. I don't know what she's supposed to be.
Yeah, kind of odd.
Right, like she's kind of just like a glamour girl, but like not like a Tiffany Stratton style thing. It's like if you actually had to come up with an adjective to describe Jasmine Nix's look, it's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, they've kind of lost the thread on a couple of these people because, like, just going back to Battleground, Kalani Jordan kind of acting like a babyface in that whole match against Sol Ruka. Although I liked the match, that was a fun little match by those two. I think, yeah. Sol Ruka, if she does that springboard from the ring to the outside and she's already torn her ACL once and she's not wearing a brace, I get scared of moves like that for people. I know that they want, I need to show you that I'm tougher than I was before, but man, I'm a guy who blew out his knee. I get nervous about those things.
On NXT this week, I liked Paige versus Saints.
Yeah,
that was a nice match. A good story. Good story.
And it kept going. It had levels to it, you know, in terms of the, you know, we're still fighting on the outside. We're fighting. We're trying to get this match in the ring. And then once we get the match in the ring, Ethan Page pulls the trigger. I did not like the setup for the four-way and when Worlds Collide.
No, that was so John Edwards. Oh, my
yes.
God.
Hey, Ray Phoenix is in NXT. Hooray.
Yeah. Great. Awesome. Can't. Yeah. Javon Evans is so goofy. They have no character for this guy.
Yeah, put him in the, what is it, Jack? Yeah, and then they give the kid from Evolve or WWID like a one-on-one match after the four-way. I'm just like, all right, why not put him in this match with all the other flippy guys?
Well, yeah, I didn't way to give away the outcome of this match, too, a little bit.
Pretty much. Anything else you want to hit on?
On NXT?
Or anything, if you forgot something.
No. Oh, yeah, we did the big title switch. I guess let me see if there's anything on SmackDown here that was worth noting. Still not. You know, Solo Sikoa, JC Mateo, and Jacob Fatu just do not have the chemistry. Like.
And that's mostly Solo.
Yeah. Solo's character's kind of hammy at this point.
Well, he doesn't have any stroke within the character because he's lost everything. He's never, you know, it's like one of those bad guy or like one of those, like, I don't know how to put it, like a gang member who still wants to be part of the gang, but nobody really respects him in the gang anymore type of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so he's trying to over, you know, like if Tongaloa and Tama Tonga came back, maybe they could give him some heft, but he has no, like his character was tough, silent guy with Roman Reigns. And then they break him off and yeah, he's a good promo, but they never gave him any wins to be the leader of the new bloodline. He lost every single match.
He was never really holding gold either. They were just giving him the Lufala and kind of using that as a proxy for gold.
And like, I like Jeff Cobb. Is he out of place in this stable?
I don't know that he's in place.
Yeah, that's the whole thing to me. Because it's
yeah,
like him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd much rather see him and and Jacob Fatu for a while be a tag team and enter into that tag division in SmackDown and see what they could do for a while, even though Jacob Fatu is on the fast track to being a solo star as well. He should be, because he's awesome. And
no,
he knows how to
work
that crowd. So
I actually, look, Jacob Fatu and Jason Mateo building up to like a Saturday night's main event match against Paul Heyman's guys, Braun and Bronson, as sort of a settling the score at the Bloodline, because Paul Heyman hates Solo Sikoa because of all the ways Solo Sikoa tortured him, would actually be a really good match in a really good way to ultimately blow up Solo's faction too.
And to get Jacob Fatu to be a babyface, fine.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You turn Jacob, like, that would be a really good sort of Saturday night's main event storyline.
Yeah, because you don't want to do it like on a pay-per-view, because you'll have dueling heel chants and stuff like that. So you put it on. Although, no, they won't, because they'd be cheering for Jacob Fatu the entire time, and they'd be going, "We want Jacob!" Clap, 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 clap.
Yeah, right. And JC could just kind of rally behind Jacob, and that would be enough to keep the babyface heel dynamic very easy.
He'd be getting booed the entire time he's in the ring. That'd be kind of funny and fun. Like, it starts to affect him. Like, stop booing me. I'm going to be likable, type of a thing.
Yeah, and Solo doesn't like it either. And then ultimately they're mad. There's a number of different ways the crowd reaction could go to. You can plan for that accordingly and still have a lovely outcome.
Shall we do Vader Club?
Let's do it.
1983, Wahoo McDaniel versus Nick Bockwinkel. I'm going a little bit into Nove's neighborhood here. This match originally from a fan cam, which is, you're sneaking giant camcorders in the 80s into arenas?
I know,
how?
Right? How?
How? But it was preserved on like a four-disc golden wrestling thing for AWA or something as well. But this is, you know, just so that for posterity's sake, for the AWA title. I was on a Wahoo McDaniel Tully Blanchard kick for a while, and there wasn't anything that really fit. They were good matches, but not, you know, great. And then I ran into this one, and I ran into the promo segment with Paul Bosch talking about the match, and they had clips from Bockwinkel and Okerlund and then Wahoo McDaniel, and I got into it. Just Nick Bockwinkel calling Wahoo McDaniel obese. It's just, and I had to temper it with watching a shoot interview by Nick Bockwinkel on how much he loved Wahoo McDaniel and how he brought him into the Hawaii territory to work after he'd kind of been working Florida and stuff. Like, he tells this anecdote of Wahoo, like on like his first night, going, "Man, if I don't get laid around here, I'm out of here." They almost came to blows in a median in Hawaii. And Nick's like, "Hey, you got to do your part in this. They're just not going to come to your thing." But he alluded to Wahoo's ability to drink. He's like, "Look, his name's Edward McDaniel. So he has that Irish in him, and he has that Native American in him. Do you think the man can't drink?" And yeah, Wahoo McDaniel was famous in my area growing up when they do shows at the Hampton Coliseum. Coliseum Mall across the road had a Bennigan's. Wahoo McDaniel would just go in there, order Jack Daniels, and say, "Leave the bottle." Shivani talked about this all the time. But this match was also great, because there's not a lot of, like, Bockwinkel's comic selling at this time. This was Wahoo smacking the crap out of Nick Bockwinkel. Bockwinkel taking a chair and just blowing up Wahoo's head. And look, I love Wahoo McDaniel. It's taken me a while to, like, I always thought he was tough, but I didn't really respect. I just thought, oh man, he's just an old guy, you know, because in Crockett, when I was growing up, when I was watching him, he's kind of that elder statesman type thing, but he had this heft kind of stuff. And then you start watching him, and my modern corollary is always Samoa Joe. Like, you know, you're going to get physical, you're going to get hard chops, and you're going to get grizzled out of Wahoo McDaniel. And just watching him with the giant headdress and taking off, and now it's time to go to school. And I'm starting to respect Bockwinkel a hell of a lot more than I did when I was a kid. Like, I've always had respect for him, don't get me wrong, but it's like when you're 15 and you're watching Nick Bockwinkel matches, it doesn't really hit as hard as when you're watching Nick Bockwinkel in your 30s and 40s. and really respecting how he worked and how he made other guys look brilliant and stuff like that. Yeah, this match, it's only about 20 minutes. Seek it out on YouTube. I loved it.
Yeah, I love Wahoo's chops. This is something that was kind of, you know, new. Wahoo's never been a guy for me.
Allow me to give stereotype warning to younger listeners who may be saying, yes, there's a lot of the Native American tomahawk chop stuff to the head. And, you know, a little bit of racial insensitivity while not trying to be insensitive from 1980s commentators about certain allusions to his Native Americanness. But, yes.
Go ahead. You know, the physicality of the match is great. It, as you mentioned with Bockwinkel, I just think, like, Bockwinkel's selling is awesome because he has so many different varieties of sell. It's not Ric Flair, where Ric Flair has like five cells and they're great and all. Like Bockwinkel, like he's spaghetti legs. He will like pratfall, like just straight. He sells a whole bunch of different ways. And he really kind of uses each one of those exaggerated cells to kind of tell a story of the
moment. But he has a serious one where he gets knocked out of the ring too, where it's like, I'm showing you his power right now. Yeah, like Flair has this too, but Flair will start out with, oh God, you know, just getting hit all the time, and then start doing the pratfalls for kind of comedic relief after he's got his ass beat enough.
The Flair shadow boxing and stuff, like, you know, Flair.
That's older Flair, though, to be honest. But go ahead.
Yeah, Flair and Bockwinkel like have really started to like kind of had like an inverse spectrum. Where when I was younger, I used to really
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like I used to really love, like I liked Ric Flair matches even when I was a kid, and I always kind of appreciated him as like this is like kind of the great version of the old style or whatever. And now, it's not that I don't like Flair matches; it's that like I see the flaws in Flair matches.
Yes.
In a way that my friend Dave Meltzer does not. Like, you know, I see gaps in the guy's style of work, gaps in the way the guy sells, and, you know, certain other things, right? And what a lot of what has illustrated those gaps for me has been watching Bockwinkel matches, because they work comparable-ish styles. And you can really see Bockwinkel's depth of selling techniques to selling and match pacing and cadencing. And also the way that Bockwinkel highlights and showcases, as you were mentioning, the adversary's skill, whether it's their power or like, oh, their punches really hurt. And Bockwinkel like really gets that across. You can't just sleep on the strikes or whatever. I really appreciate Nick Bockwinkel.
I'll tell you about the selling, because I like that point, because as I said before we went off the air, I had watched part of a Dusty and Wahoo versus Flair and Tully match where it's like bull rope and, for lack of a better term, Native American strap, called a different name by that. But Bockwinkel and
Yappapai strap match, brother.
Well, Bockwinkel and Tully's selling are very similar. Like, they will do the rubber leg stuff, and even Arn will get into the rubber leg stuff, but it's only for short-term comedic effect. They're bloody and they're in over their heads as bullies. That's the kind of selling that they're doing, like with Bockwinkel. Like, Bockwinkel is, you know, this grandiose technical master type thing, and he'll do the drunken master leg thing, kind of like Moxley, but not as obnoxious as Moxley. But it's to serve the point that he's in over his head. Flair, he'll take this beating, and then he'll just start the ghost walk and do the Johnny Valentine flop, and it kind of kills momentum, because it's like the laugh line in a highly dramatic scene of some sort, and you're sort of taken out of it a bit. And it's even worse when he goes back in that latter stage evolution WWE.
Oh, dude, when he's doing selling.
When he's doing the funny, you know, put him up, Bert Lahr, Wizard of Oz, Cowardly Lion type thing. Yeah, it's noticeable.
That's a great point. Is it like Flair's penchant for the slapstick sell pulls the camera from his opponent and brings it back on to him. Like, what we're actually supposed to be getting across in this cell is the efficacy of the move, and we should be ruminating on whatever move was done. And instead, now we see Ric Flair, like, swimming in midair, right, and then, you know, falling and flailing down. You forget, is he doing that because he just took a bad suplex off the top rope, or because of a clothesline or a back body drop? What? How did we get there? Doesn't matter. Ric Flair's doing his goofy sell. I like that. But that's not best service for the match or the spot in question.
Yeah, at the time, people loved it. And now as you watch it over and over again, it's like, yeah, you know, like Dusty had his comedic
spots.
They
loved it for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Is my point. Like, you know what I mean? It is a gag that turns into a cliche.
Yes.
You deploy a gag strategically. Yeah, the pie of the face. When you do a pie of the face every time, now you've turned it into this cliche. And the reason to draw for the pie in the face no longer exists. It's just a thing we do.
Let's end it there. No Vader Club next week because we're just not going to have time.
You don't know that. Yeah, yeah.
I forgot Chris might want to do some audio on his own, and I'm fine with
it. I might even live watch it and kind of break it down, give you a little live commentary in the back end of the show.
Well, we'll see what happens. There might be some pasted and cut audio, but if you didn't get enough me, and God knows you usually do, I did the Double or Nothing post show on Fight Game, and I also did the Dynamite show this week. I won't be on that show this next week, but you can follow me at CrapGame13 on X. I'm not going to be posting there this week, but you can still follow me. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Chris has some plugs as well. Let's get
to
it now.
So I'm working on an album. If you want to hear an exclusive cut from the album, I'm not going to be putting out anything else until I actually drop the single here, which will hopefully be out sometime late June, I think is the timetable here. Album sometime in July. You can go and get a sneak peek of that album. Song, The Sign, is up on my Instagram. My Instagram is DOCTOR_NOV. Go and listen to it and then give it to a friend and say if they don't listen to it, that you're not going to be friends with them anymore because you don't want to be friends with assholes.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.